story, but we tried to tell the story behind this story, which is, of course, not so much that it's like such a great revelation to figure out that if you're going to chop a baby in half, the real mother won't actually want you to do it. But it's really about listening. And Shlomo was able to inspire the Jewish people through this incident. Daniel, it's great to have you. So this is sort of like a catalyst for the Navi to describe what we're going to look at tonight, which is Shlomo's administrative state. Now, admittedly, that doesn't sound so exciting. But this is actually new. It's novel. So the entire chapter that we're going to look at today is about Shlomo as an administrator. So before we take a look at the Psukim, which have a lot of proper nouns and a lot of characters of secondary or tertiary importance at best, let's talk about administration. So remember Shlomo, when Hashem said to him, you know, Sha'al ma'itin lach, so Shlomo expressed concern about being able to manage such a large number of people, and God gives him his wish to have a lev shomea, to have a sort of a brilliant, insightful heart, excellent at listening. But there's still a sort of a dilemma here, which is, it's one thing, you know, you have a genius at the top of society, right? You're going to still run into what I call the Yitro problem, which is you could have Moshe Rabbeinu himself, and the lines are still going to be pretty long, right? Remember, the Yitro comes, and he sees it's DMV-like scenario where everybody's waiting from the morning until the evening, and he says, well, this won't do, you know, and okay, so you need some kind of an administrative structure. Okay, so let's open it up. What are the goals of administration? What are the inherent liabilities of administration? It's a good opportunity. Anybody want to weigh in first? What are the goals of administration? We're going to meet Shlomo as an administrator tonight.
The trains should run on time.
Okay, so we're looking for efficiency, right? Streamlining. So administration is basically a way of trying to maintain semblance of efficiencies at large scales. Okay, that's why you need administration in general. Okay, so what are the liabilities of administration? They just come along with the system. It's true in a company, it's true in a government, it's true in a school, it doesn't really matter. What are the liabilities of administrative? If you study industrial psychology, this will be, yeah, Evo, okay.
Too many incompetent administrators.
Okay, so, you know, competence is always an issue, right? So, you know, once you start, you know, bringing more people in, right, so there's always quality control issues. Okay, very good. All right. Right. Part of that is sort of endemic, right? Most kids, you go around the second grade classroom and, you know, you go, what do you want to be when you grow up? So very few of the kids say, like, a solid middle manager. Really not interested in being at the top, but what I want to do is I want to provide that second, third level management with efficiency. I mean, maybe it'd be good, right? But you're not getting too much of that. So motivation is an issue. Yeah, for sure. Okay, what else? Let's assume that we've got, like, it's the British civil service of the late 19th century. You get, like, the brightest people in society as second and third level civil servants. What problem do you still have? This is actually going back to the Yitro scenario. What problem do you still have? Even if you get the best people, they're not even corrupt. They're honest, they're efficient, they're, like, highly motivated.
Need a set of rules.
Okay, let's say they're all following, like, you know, they're all following the rules. They all, you know, they're all on board.
Impersonal.
Ah, okay, good. So, you know, if there's one thing to be said for everybody standing in line to see Moshe, it's that they eventually get to see Moshe, right? So there's something inspirational, if inefficient, about having, right, a system where, you know, everybody gets to have some kind of a direct interaction with a leader, with a great person, right? So sometimes what you do in life is you trade, you know, inspiration for efficiency. A lot of systems work like that, right? And it's necessary. But one of the big questions is, can you set up an administrative system where people don't feel like they're disenfranchised, like they're marginalized? And that's a really interesting question that Shlomo's administrative structure was meant to address. We'll get to the psukim in a little bit, but I want to pursue this line of thinking. So I agree with my father that bureaucracies and administrations can feel highly impersonal under the best of conditions. Let's say they're really not corrupt. Let's say, you know, in some theoretical universe, they could be made efficient. So what's one way that you could try to mitigate the problem of the impersonal, the lack of inspiration? Right now, people aren't going to get to see Moshe. They'll have to go to their local judge, the Sarei Alafim, Sarei Meos, Sarei Chamishim, Sarei Asaros. There's something lost for the people in that equation. You're not going to get to see Shlomo. Right, last week we talked about how great it was that even the Nashim Zonot got to see Shlomo. Right? Justice for all, we called it. Now we're in an administrative state. Who wants that? So what's one way of trying to mitigate a little bit of the impersonal? Think going back to Shmuel. Shmuel had an interesting solution to this. He had nowhere near the administrative apparatus of a Shlomo, but what did he do? What was his technique?
He traveled around the country.
Right, circuit judge. We still use the expression today. So he did try to get around, literally, right, on an annual basis. So that is going to be a factor tonight. So if you keep things moving around a little bit, right, you can maintain efficiencies, structures, but at the same time, you know, try to have a relationship with, you know, even the outer provinces. Right? So this is really a big part of the discussion when it comes to Shlomo. Okay. Any other thoughts before we get to the psukim? Anybody have any other thoughts or observations, concerns, hypotheses that they want to share regarding the construction of an administrative state? Okay. So maybe I'll raise it just because nobody's raised it yet. Is how does one avoid patronage? Right. What happens is when government creates jobs, so how do you maintain, this is what my father said at the beginning, well, you want efficiencies, but how do you maintain efficiencies when there are jobs to be filled? And eventually what ends up happening is those jobs end up going, let's say the most efficient people, but, you know, to people who know somebody.
So you have to have a meritocracy.
Right. So how do you manage that? Everybody starts out saying, no, you know, we're the best man for the job. So that's going to be a key metric that we should look at tonight as well, which is how did Shlomo do on that score? Okay. So I think it's really interesting. So let's take a look at Perek Gimel into Perek Dalet. And we'll learn the whole Perek tonight. Because like I say, it moves pretty quickly. This is, of course, after the quote-unquote split baby incident. We know it's not really about that. It's about Shlomo's capacity to listen. So all of Israel is on board. This is an extremely inspirational incident when these two Nashim Zonod were able to have a private audience with the king. So as is noted by many, this is meant to be contrasted with David, right? David didn't start off as king of the Jewish people. He started out a king in Yehuda, 7 years and 6 months. And Shlomo, right, begins as the melech over all the Jewish people. And Shlomo immediately begins, he understands the need to construct a cabinet. So ve'ela asarim asher lo azar Yahu ben Sadoka Kohen. The first member of his cabinet, maybe a minister without portfolio, some people speculate that he was one of the Sofrim, some people think that he was a Kohen Mashuach Melchama, was a fellow named Azariah ben Sadok. Then you have Elichoref Achia ben Shisha Sofrim, they're kind of scribes. Then you have Yoshafat ben Achilud Hamazkir, a secretary. There's a lot of discussion what the sort of the boundary point is between the role of the Sofrim and the Mazkir. Are they overlapping? Vinayahu ben Yehoyadal Atzava. Okay, so he's the chief of staff or the defense ministry. Tzadok ve'Eviatar Kohanim. Tzadok is no surprise. Eviatar is a big surprise because we thought he was exiled under home arrest. Those who think that this is a different Eviatar. Azaryahu ve'Natan al Nitzavim. We'll get to the Nitzavim a little bit later. That's a fascinating substructure of the administrative apparatus. Zavud ben'Natan Kohen Re'eh HaMelech. The consigliere, a kind of an advisor of sorts, chief of staff. Really interesting. Shlomo wanted somebody who wasn't part of any ministry, but just sort of his own personal man in the cabinet. Achi Shar al-Abayit, kind of an interior minister. Adoniram ben Avdal Hamas, he's going to be the most prominent probably of everybody besides Benayahu, who already has achieved great prominence. Adoniram is the finance minister. Okay, Lishlomo, Shneimasar Nitzavim al Kol Yisrael. So he established 12 provincial heads of the Jewish people, and they had a financial function. V'chilkulu es ha-melech v'esbeito chodesh ba-shana, yia al ha-echad l'chalkel. So basically, Shlomo had these expenses, the expenses of state, right, of running the palace. And these were maintained by these Nitzavim. So we actually know their names and their regions. Ve'elesh Mosan ben Chur Bahar Ephraim ben Deker ben Makatz b'Shalavim b'Beit Shamesh ve'Elon Beit Chanan ben Chesed b'Arubot lo Shocha v'Chol Eretz Chefer ben Avinadav kol Nafat Dor Tafat bat Shlomo hayta lo Lisha. Come back to that in a second. Bana ben Achilu Tanach u'Megido v'Chol Beit Shan asher Eitzel Tzartana b'Tachad Yisrael מבית שער הרבל מחולד מעבר ליוק מעם, בן גבר ברמות גלעד, לא חבוד יאיר במנשר אשר בגלעד, לא חבל ארגוב אשר בבשן, 60 ערים גדולות חומה ובריח נחושת, אחי נדב, בן עידו מחניימה, אחי מצ, בן אבטלי, גם הוא לקח את בסמת בת שלמה לאישה. So far, of the eight that we've learned about, provincial, finance ministers, as it were, two of them end up marrying Shlomo's daughters. Okay, more on that a little bit later. Bana ben Chushai ba'asheru ve'alot, Yoshavad ben Paruach b'Yisachar, Shemi ben Elab ben Yamin, Gever ben Uri be'eretz Gilad, Eretz Yichon melech Amri ve'og melech Bashan, u'netziv echad asher ba'aretz. This is a little ambiguous. Who is this 13th, the netziv echad asher ba'aretz? Interesting, because it's Adar Rishon. Some people speculate that it was actually somebody who was meant to provide for the costs of a Shana Mu'beres, of a leap year. Some people, I think this is a little bit more likely, think that it's related to like sort of a supervisor, the Netziv Echad Asher Ba'aretz, maybe going all the way back to this Azaryahu ben Sadok HaKohen. I think that's kind of an elegant theory because that would sort of tie up all the loose ends. Okay, so there's a basic disagreement amongst the Mefarshim how this worked. At minimum, we know that Shlomo divided all of Israel is into 12 provinces, and he had a finance governor for each of these provinces, and that they would cover The cost of state on a monthly basis. There are those who feel that Shlomo would actually travel around and that he would spend a month in each of these locations, which is a really interesting suggestion because it gets at that question we were talking about before about making sure that he maintained personal contact with all 12 tribes. So what I did here, in case you're interested, is I just sort of, this is the cabinet, right? These are the names over here. And these are their positions. Azariah ben Sadok is, you know, the one that we're not entirely sure what he did. Then you have the scribes, you have the Kohanim, you have the person who was supervising the Nitzavim, you have Re'eh HaMelech, again, not attached to any ministry, but sort of, you know, Shlomo's, you know, advisor, the interior minister and the finance minister. And then you have the Nitzavim who are listed here. You know, and you could sort of see how they come from different regions of the country. And in particular, right, we'll come back to this discussion in just a moment. The fact is, two of them marry Shlomo's daughters. Last pasuk, Yehuda b'Yisrael rabim, kachol asher al hayam larov, ochlim shotim usmechim. So Jewish people become many, and they're multitudes. And they're eating, and they're drinking, and they're very happy. So there's a Medrash Rabbah on this pasuk, which takes a relatively favorable angle. Rabbi Nachman b'shem Rav Bibi, Rabbi Chia Rabbah b'shem Rav Lazar ben Yaakov, Nimshul Yisrael kechol. The Jews are like sand. Ma'achol atah atah oseh ba'guma mi ba'erev. You dig a hole in the sand of a shachris atah motzei atah shenismala. Right, the tide brings in more sand, water, it gets filled in. All of the thousands that died during David's reign, right, especially at the end when he counted the Jewish people and there's this horrible plague. So we see like the Medrash is taking the position that Shlomo's, you know, reign like far, far outshines that of his father, that of David. Okay. So that would be a very positive, way of taking this pasuk here. Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim kachol asher hayam larov, ochlim v'shotim usmechim. Right. I think there's a different layer there, but we'll come to that in just a moment. Okay, let's first open it up. Reactions to Shlomo's administrative state. What do we notice right away? How many basic structures of state are there? Is this a one-tier system, a two-tier system, a three-tier system, a four-tier system? How does it work? What's the basic? Right, okay, so the Nitzavim roughly align with the Shvatim. Okay. So you have a kind of federalist dimension here, the 12 provinces. But what else do you have?
The cabinet.
Right. And the cabinet is nationalized, right? You don't have, you know, a chief of staff for every tribe, right? There's a national finance minister. There's a national scribe or secretary. Right, so what Shlomo seems to be doing is trying to create some kind of a balance between federalism, in other words, you know, what we would call kind of states' rights, and national structure. So he has a cabinet, and he has these nitzavim, which I think is a really interesting balance. Right, each tribe roughly has its representation. There's also financial responsibilities that come with that. But then there's this national cabinet. Okay, so trying clearly to strike a balance between respecting the tribal identity of the Jews on the one hand, but also making sure that they're molded into a national unit. Okay, so that I think is really fascinating. What else? What else do we notice about Shlomo's administrative structure? Okay, let me be asking a little bit more pointed way. What's the stated goal of the Nitzavim, of the 12 provinces? What are they meant to do? Herb, go ahead. Just make sure to take yourself off mute. You're on mute. Got to take yourself off mute.
I mean, they're financial people. They are responsible for the economy of the areas that they govern. But there doesn't seem to be a level of the judges of the judiciary here at all.
Okay, good. Good, 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 good. So why is that noteworthy? Why are we focused on the fact that each of the provinces is providing, right, 1 month a year in terms of the financial burdens of state? What is Shlomo demonstrating wisdom and sensitivity towards?
That he's shared, but all people have a connection to him.
Right, so everybody's supporting, right, the centralized government, but nobody is carrying too much of the burden, right? That's what people don't appreciate. If they feel that they are, right, carrying too much of the tax burden. So there's an attempt here at, you know, constructing some kind of equity into the system, right, by having different provinces and having different provinces, you know, contribute towards the whole. Okay, that I think is really significant. So I think the two basic features of the administrative structure that we could tell right away is the two-tiered system, the federalist in nationalist structure, and an attempt to generate some kind of equity with respect to the financial burdens of state, and not having a problem of disproportionate burdens. Okay, Eva, please.
I just have a question. Everyone has an equal share. Are they all equally financially equivalent?
That's a good question, right? You know, because, you know, presumably if there was, you know, more wealth in a particular area of Israel, so then you want to do things, you know, proportionally, you know, you come to a different place. But yeah, that's a good question. Actually, some of the Mefarshim do discuss that, do wonder about that. It's hard to know. But at least on its face, and I think it was an attempt towards some kind of, like I say, some kind of equity with respect to the financial burden. Okay. And again, like the Medrash takes a very favorable approach, right? Shlomo's constructed a structure that allows the Jewish people to multiply. Ochlim v'shotim u'smechim. They're eating, they're drinking, and they're rejoicing. And by the way, I want to, before shifting into a little bit more of a critical mode, right, I want to take note of this. Administration is not glamorous. And it's really important. It's often the difference between success and failure is whether you can construct, you know, stable, rational systems. It's not easy to do. And the Navi seems to say that Shlomo was successful. He was Melech al Kol Yisrael, and he generated prosperity. Ochlim v'shotim v'smechim, and also the numbers are good, right? High birth rate, kachol asher ayam larov. The Medrash says that he did much better than David in this regard. You never saw this kind of administrative state with David, right? It was never, there were always factions and tribalism, a lot of problems in that respect. Forget about it during the days of Shoftim. I mean, ish kol yashar v'nav yaseh. So Shlomo's really breaking ground here. I think Shlomo's a very capable administrator. 2 points of critique. One, did anybody see any creeping nepotism here? Okay. Wasn't too hard to find. What am I alluding to? What's that?
Two of them married this
girl. Right, okay, so two of the needs. So this is disproportionate to their, in terms of their, you know, representation of the general population, right? One out of every six Jewish males did not marry a daughter of Shlomo. So now you begin to have the problems that come along with government, is that now, you know, it becomes a little bit of a family business. You know, this is not so good. You see that creeping in. That's number one. Number two, The Navi concludes after this, you know, detailing Shlomo's administrative state by saying, yeah, Yisrael kechol asher al hayam larov, ochlim v'shotim u'smeichim. Anybody have any thoughts about that?
It's not good.
Yeah, Ruthie, what's your sense of that pasuk?
You know, the first half could be interpreted in a positive way that, you know, they are many. But ochlim v'shotim u'smeichim kind of already has a negative connotation that they're being too like revelry and kind of going in the wrong direction.
Right. Quite simply, it doesn't seem like Shlomo's constructed this administrative state in such a way that, you know, this is, you know, helped promote spirituality throughout the land. And by the way, you know, lest we think that that's throughout Sefer Melachim, and we're going to see this time and again, where we're going to get like a spiritual evaluation of, you know, the various Melachim and what they did. Right here, you know, Shlomo's administrative state leads to great bounty and prosperity. You know, the like I say, the birth rate is up, the GDP is up, you know, people are ochlim v'shotim v'smeichim, his approval ratings are pretty high. It doesn't seem like he's doing much for the people spiritually. And that is, I think, quite striking. That absence is striking in light of the fact this is a very carefully calibrated system. Is he not interested in, you know, creating a spiritual infrastructure? You obviously put a lot of thought into the financial infrastructure here, right? Clearly. I'm not saying that's bad, but does it have to be one or the other?
Seeing that a bunch of his appointees were Kohanim, which I would think would be a good thing. Was that just an accident, or did he have any intention with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting is that he doesn't seem to have them... we don't get any sense of them having some kind of a national program, right? You know, like Teach for America, you know, or Teach for Israel, you know, the Shlomo Corps. So I'm really fascinated by this, is that Shlomo doesn't, for whatever reason, he does not construct spiritual infrastructure. Whereas the administrative infrastructure, I think, is decidedly impressive. Intricate balance between national and federal structures, shared burdens of economy, maybe even kind of, you know, this geographic diversity, especially if he's going around, as many interpret that, you know, spending a month here and a month there. I mean, there's a lot of traction for that idea. But what's the... You know, sort of like, where's the Torah component here? Yeah, Mom, go ahead.
The whole construct of that sentence doesn't sort of, one first half doesn't fit with the second half. Like, if you say the people were plentiful, then it's just like they were eating and drinking. It doesn't line up.
Well, I mean, here's how I would think about it, right? These are different metrics of success. The nation is growing, that's good, right? You don't want a shrinking population, right? You don't want to be Russia or Japan. You want a growing population, number one, and then you want a happy population. And so not only are they growing quantitatively, but, you know, people's, you know, their spirits are up. Ochlim v'shotim u'smeichim. Ruthie and I are a little down on the, you know, what I would call the materialism here. You know, doesn't seem like there's a great spiritual engine that's driving this. It makes you wonder.
I mean, I think I would have said something like, and the land was plentiful, and the land, it takes it to the national level, down to the individual eating and drinking.
But isn't that the point? They're saying that the nation as a whole was thriving, and then each individual was, you know, was happy. right? So it's not like a statist kind of a thing. It, you know, you had a good balance. The nation is growing and the individual is happy and successful. So
I was thinking, connected to what you were saying a little bit, to connect the two parts, that, you know, Hashem's promise was that Bnei Yisrael would be as many as the sand, you know, by the sea and all of that, and the stars in the sky. So kind of like they had the ability to fulfill that, but they weren't keeping their part potentially with, you know, the other part of doing Hashem's mitzvot. Like they had that potential, but then perhaps it wasn't actualized.
Yeah, right, Ruthie. So let's put it in these terms. There's nothing here like mamlachas kohanim v'goy kadosh, right? You don't get that impression, right? You know, or anything remotely approximating that. So Shlomo may have created an efficient system. He may have created a prosperous system. It seems relatively devoid of spiritual moment or purpose. And given the degree of structure and planning and just thought that went into this, it's very interesting that he didn't put more energy into the spiritual side of things.
Well, but it's an age-old problem, right? You know, so his father had a pretty rough life. So his father was a religious guy. You know, he'd been through a lot. So he wanted to build a house for God. You know, he had this kind of religious sentiment after all the suffering he would went through. But Shlomo kind of had it easy. He was wealthy. You know, maybe a little less of a religious sentiment, right? What does the Torah say? Vayishman Yishurun Vayivat, right? You know, once the getting gets good, people aren't so religious. I don't think it's like a matter of definition, right? You know, you're saying, you know, the people ate, they drank, they were happy. But somewhere else it says, V'chalta v'savata v'rachted Hashem Elokecha. So it's not impossible. It just happened not to work out with this administration.
Or at least not yet. I mean, so maybe that's, you know, so it's just interesting, you know, that it's not like Shlomo's first major national enterprise is to build the Beis HaMikdash. That's what I would have predicted at the outset of the Sefer. It seems like this first order of business is to create the administrative state. And I guess that sort of ties in to my broader thesis here in Sefer Melachim, which is that we're trying to challenge the conventional wisdom. Right? The conventional wisdom is that with Shlomo, everything was on track until he gets old, and then his wives lead him astray. Right? That's the sort of the prevailing wisdom. And what I've been trying to do, you know, over the last 10 years is really to challenge that basic narrative and to say that if you're reading it more carefully, there's a lot that's left to be desired along the way. You know, going back to the earliest stages when Shlomo, who's supposed to be an Ish Shalom B'Sheket, uses, you know, great violence against, you know, various individuals, whether it's Shimi, whether it's Yoav, whether it's Adoniyahu. He thinks he knows better than his mother in that regard. And so he's more complicated, I think, than people, you know, make it out to be. And now this, right? I don't think it was just sort of, you know, a great departure, a shocking debacle that at the end of his life, which are in chapter 11 that we'll get to, you know, that Vayile Sikna Shlomo v'nashavi tuas levavo, that he was led astray. Right? What do we see? We see that, you know, I do wonder about his basic spiritual instincts. There's something like deeply materialist about his orientation.
Maybe he wasn't such a bad guy. Maybe it just, you know, he saw his father's life. His father was this, you know, small town guy, shepherd, you know, and he had trouble his whole life. The Jewish people were coming at him from right and left and up and down. Maybe he wanted, you know, more of a secure base with his administration.
Right.
Okay, you could say he didn't take it to the limit. He was lacking in the religious component. But, you know, you could see where he was coming
from. Yeah, so again, it's not mutually exclusive. So it would be interesting because he identifies so much as his father's son. We tried to document that you know, he would pick up a little bit more on that. But he doesn't seem... it's really noteworthy. This comes before... He could have set out to build the Beis HaMikdash. That doesn't come first. First, he thinks he has to build his administrative state, which I think is really interesting. And the administrative state is like devoid of a ministry of education, as best as I can tell. You know, it seems like it's efficient. It's prosperous. He's got a good finance minister. He's got a good, you know, tax collection structure. He's got a good geographic, especially if he's traveling around. I like that idea. I don't know. I don't know what's going through his mind in terms of what he sees as his spiritual responsibility.
He didn't pick up much learning from his father. His father was constantly learning. And right. And you don't see that at all, as you said, in the beginning anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Aside from David wanting to build the Beit HaMikdash, how did he promote spirituality on a national level? Like, we know he was a religious individual, but what did he do nationally to promote spirituality?
Fair point, though I would say he didn't have very elaborate administrative structures in general. So I wouldn't say, like, you know, I don't think he put a lot of thought into this. Shlomo, it's the contrast, it's the relative difference that's striking. So he's an extremely elaborate administrative structure that specifically lacks spiritual ingenuity. Charlotte, go ahead, and then Eva.
Do we know how old Shlomo is now?
Pretty young. You know, he's a self-described Na'ar at the beginning. He's still pretty close to the beginning. So I'm going to say, you know, at most, like, 20?
Yeah, so he still doesn't necessarily have much guidance, and he's still alone. You know, it's not like he had a strong connection with his brothers. So maybe what he's trying to do now is just create that unity so he has that support system so he could, when he's ready, to take it to the next stage.
So you're saying that in his defense, let's say to build the Beit HaMikdash, he feels he needs to have some structure?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe that's a good, like, limud zchus. Eva.
I was basically going to say, thought. He can't build the Beit HaMikdash if things are still chaotic. He needs order first, so he can get everyone unified and everyone involved in the project. So his first goal is to get the country organized and set up, and then he can do the most important thing, which is very obviously a spiritual thing. So I would argue that he's taking a sensible step in first getting the country peaceful and organized so that he can then move to the greatest spiritual project of all time. So.
Well said. Okay, Charlotte and Eva, but very well done. Very well done. Daniel.
The one that you had asked earlier about the consequences of a big federalist system, and the obvious one is deficits and running up a big bill and the succession plan. And ultimately, this is a foreshadowing potentially of what would go wrong and the resentment that would happen when he did do big public work projects.
Yeah.
You know, the question I had was, other than the sons-in-law, do we know much about these leaders? Is this are these all loyalists? Is this a spoil system? Is this a team of rivals? To what extent did he try to build bridges? Do we know anything about his political instinct?
It's a great question. So to get back to your first point, Daniel, right now, the basic consensus is that he was still balancing the budget. Like, you know, because he's got these, you know, he's got this monthly system in place, and it seems like, you know, it's basically a prosperous situation. The grandiose stuff is yet to come, where, you know, he starts running up the deficits for sure. to great public discontent, right? Which then, of course, dovetails with the other point you alluded to, the schism which follows in Yeravam. Secondly, we know very little about these people. It seems like they're... Well, here's one thing that we do know about them, that the provincial heads were all from those areas, right? So, you know, it's not like he took somebody from Minnesota and made him, you know, the governor of South Carolina, you know, or vice versa. So there was some, you know, cultural and geographic logic to it. It's interesting. I think I saw it in the Abravanel, if not then in the Radak, that they tried to defend the idea that the sons-in-law end up, you remember two of the sons-in-law end up being in those positions. They said, oh, it was afterwards. They were good guys, you know, and he just sort of, then he brought them into the family. You know, I guess that's when, you know, I end up in the same place, of course, but it wasn't like he just installed his sons-in-law, right, you know. It started off in a little bit of more of a meritocratic way. But yeah, I'm just fascinated by the, you know, what sort of what his area of focus was. I think getting back to Eva and Charlotte, I mean, that's maybe the best and most charitable way of looking at it, is that, okay, you know, he is sort of materially focused, but maybe he just feels that this is the way to go. This is necessary. You know, get some structure, get some order, get some stability. And then, you know, the spiritual aspirations can be, you know, worked out. We'll see. I mean, you know, we'll have to try to evaluate that. But final pasuk of the parak being ochlim v'shotim u'smechim does not in the end, I guess I share Ruthie's concerns. It does not strike me as a great spiritual commentary. It's great wealth, great prosperity, growth, but none of it's spiritual. So, you know, we'll see if Shlomo can close that deficit, spirituality deficit, you know, in the weeks to come, as he begins to lay the foundations of the great national project of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's... I guess that's where we'll leave things off tonight. And we'll pick it up this time next week.
Shkoyach, thank you.
Everybody have a great week. Have a good night.
Have a good night.
Shkoyach. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Rabbi.